All right. So we have Click here, and I don't know your name.
Aiden.
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 Aiden?
Yeah.
Oh, Aiden. Okay.
Yeah.
Very
like
cool.
Like A-I-D-E-N?
A-I-D-A-N.
Gotcha.
So tell us a little bit about yourselves to start with. You guys are affiliated with Tool.
So we're with Tool, the open organization of blog makers. I've been doing it for like probably 7 years now. I've been with Tool for probably 4 years of it now. And we go to the conferences and teach blog picking. We also hold monthly meetings at our chapters. So if you go to our website, tool with 3os.us, you can load it up, and it'll, under members, it should show you where the membership is for your area.
All right, well, that's really cool.
How many chapters do you guys have?
Over 30.
Over 30? Wow.
That's a good number, actually.
Yeah, they're all over the place.
Yeah, all through the United States. So Tool actually started in the Netherlands. So there's tool.nl, and they're actually the founders of it. The first, or when the U.S. chapter first started, is at Hope, 2006.
Nice.
Yeah, so it actually started here in New York City when they established a U.S. base.
Where are you both based? What are your home chapters?
So I'm based in Boston. We're on that one.
And I'm based in New York.
Cool. Northeast represent. Is there a Philadelphia chapter?
There is a Philadelphia chapter.
She just
here.
Got super excited.
So yeah, and every to have a chapter, you have to meet up once a month. So there's meetings that are open to the public. So you're more
open to the public. Very cool. Very cool.
So how did you guys get into lockpicking? Like, there must have been something that spawned. Like,
I couldn't.
Did you wake up one day and were like,
what were you trying to get into?
It was the internet. I don't know what happened. I was looking around one day, and I think I'd always been interested in it. It's one of those intriguing things, you know. Yeah, and I ended up buying a set of picks and giving it a shot, and got my first lock open, and that was pretty exciting. And I think from there it was all downhill. So I turned up to one of the meetings and met one of the other guys there that helps run it with me, and we were away laughing. So yeah, we get a pretty regular membership of 4 to 6 people turning up. Mm-hmm. I know New York's a bit bigger.
A lot bigger.
You have it at a pub.
Oh, that's
that,
great.
That probably
so
would help.
Happy hour with lockpickers.
Yeah, right?
And it does help, because a lot of people, when they first start lockpicking, they get a little like frustrated that they're not opening it right away. So we tend to lubricate that with a little bit of alcohol, and it tends to help relax people, and then they get more comfortable in actually asking questions and wanting to learn more about it.
It's interesting as well, we get a lot of IT people come through and explaining to them how locks work in terms of vulnerabilities and exploits,
right?
That they're usually relating to software sides of things, but when you explain it from a mechanical sense, it's one of the only, I guess, forms of hacking, really, that you get a lot of physical feedback. A lot of things you're dealing with, software, code, things like that. So, yeah, a lot of people find it a very different tactile experience from what they're used to, but they still get to challenge that that puzzle bit of their brain that they really enjoy.
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking of earlier. I said, when I think of lockpicks, I think of it as this old classic art. Whenever I think about lockpicking, I think of environments or destinations in like fantasy video games or RPG video games that are either, you know, set back in time or in a dystopian place where technology is not prevalent and available.
Yeah.
So old-fashioned physical locks are the way things are protected. So I actually did not know before I actually got here last night that there was a lockpick village. So I've been, I was saying to these folks earlier, I've just been kind of nervously peeking around these tables, like, wow, look at all the tools on that table, or that guy selling really big padlocks. So what do you guys have over at your tables for, you know, newbies, experienced lock pickers, members of chapters? What could we expect to see coming over? What can we do?
So right now we actually have our Tremendous 12, which is our... It's everything you need to start lockpicking.
Is this a kit?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a lockpicking kit. It comes with 12 pieces. There's 6 turning tools and 6 picks. And it's what that will allow you to do is to be able to pick virtually any pin tumbler lock. So, and that's what gets you started. And we have progressive sets too, so it goes from 1 to 6. Because what that is it's a lock. As you start, it has one pin and then it progresses up to 6 pins.
Right. Okay.
So you still get that, like, instead of starting off with like a 5 pin and getting frustrated and then giving up, you actually can open that first lock. Like, we say to everyone that if you come and sit down at the tables, you will open at least one lock.
I think I'll make that my mission for today.
Definitely.
Not just for the weekend, for today. Open, pick my first lock.
And anyone in the black tool shirts are open and blaming. Like, our whole community is very open. Like, we appreciate questions. Like, we are very eager to have people come over and ask us questions about locks.
Mm-hmm.
So,
So what are, I mean, really new question here, but what are everyday examples of pin and tumbler locks? Are we talking padlocks, car door handles?
Yeah, front doors.
Front doors,
typically,
residential front doors?
Just about everyone has a pin tumbler on their front door. Padlocks are another common one. Probably the two main ones.
Hmm.
Car locks are actually, they're wafer locks.
Yeah, they're different.
So did you call it a wafer lock?
Yeah.
So it's actually a different type of lock. It's not pin tumblers. So what we'll be teaching...
Oh yeah, that sounded better, that less. Readjusting microphones.
What we'll be teaching is actually picking pin tumbler locks. So they're the most common locks in the United States.
Okay. Well, I guess my next question is, with this renowned interest in lock picking and lock picking groups, on the other side of things, are we seeing advancements in how locks, I mean, pin tumbler locks, is that the standard? That's generally, that's the most common type of lock. We have all of these hackers learning how to pick them. What's the converse side? Do we have people developing more advanced types of pin and tumbler locks?
So we have, before we get into that, we have two rules of lock picking. I always forget to start off with this, because a lot of people think that we're teaching like the next generation of criminals, like, oh, you're teaching people how to break into these houses. So we always tell people that there are two rules to lock picking. So the first rule is you don't pick locks that you don't own. So a lot of people think like, oh, I'm renting this house, or this is my dorm room, I have keys to this, this is mine. Well, it's not, because you're renting it.
Right, you don't own that lock.
Exactly, which falls into like, people will say, well, this is my house, I own this lock. And then we come into, you don't want to pick locks that you rely on. So a lot of people will go home and they'll be like, oh, I'm going to pick my front door lock and I'm going to see how that works, and they'll end up breaking something off inside of that lock, and then it ends up rendering that lock useless.
Right.
So is what we encourage people to do is you want to pick locks that you don't rely on and that belong to you. So if you want to pick your front door lock, you go out and buy a duplicate of that lock and then practice on it. And if it's really easy to open, then you know, hey, maybe I should replace this. Like,
or if I accidentally lock myself out of my house, just reach into my pocket, pull out my kit, bingo.
Yeah.
But you don't want it to be that easy. You don't want to be like, oh, I can open this lock in 5 seconds, so mm-hmm. I'm just going to keep it. Which is what we also educate people on, is how secure they actually are. Mm-hmm. Like, how safe is it? Now, some people will go in and they'll go to the store, like Home Depot, and go buy like a 4-pack padlocks. And it'll be like the cheap, like master number 3 padlocks. And so what you're doing is you're going to go and you're going to lock up a shed, like something that doesn't, it has like garden tools, nothing really important in it. So you're going to use that first lock. And then you're going to buy something, a boat, and you're going to be like, oh, well, I have to lock this boat up. Oh, well, look at this. I have another one of these locks just lying around that I'm not using. I'm going to put that on there. And look, the same key works for both of them. So what we try to educate people on is they just think it's a lock. Like, if nobody has the key to it, then they can't open it. But it's how secure they actually are with what lock.
And we have a lot of guys, a lot of members that are actually working with the lock manufacturers. So it's the same as the hacker community, right? You discover an exploit, someone works with the manufacturer, they create a patch, they release something else. So there's a lot of that going on. When you can pay $250, $300 for a padlock, a single padlock, they're now getting to the point where they have tiny magnets in them that are all randomized, so you can't duplicate, you know, like, it's all sort of crazy things like that. but obviously you don't want to spend $250 on a padlock to just lock up something tiny. So there's that whole selecting the security that's appropriate, but also just having the knowledge so that you can make an informed decision. Because a lot of people do just think a lock's a lock, and that's not really the case, you know.
I love the idea of performing a self-security evaluation on your assets, on your physical assets, understanding lock picking, understanding what is the value of this to me, or what would be the loss if a lock picker were to come in and raid my shed and take my riding lawnmower and take all of my garden tools versus unhooking my boat and driving it away.
And a lot of it's about the security surrounding it, right? There's no point putting a $300 lock on a door that's got a very feeble wood panel on it, because they're just going to punch through the panel, right? And so it's kind of security as a holistic view is really important as well.
I guess that sort of makes me think of, you're talking about buying like the 4-pack of inexpensive padlocks to lock up your garden shed. I think it makes me wonder, at what point is it, what's the threshold of difficulty of brute forcing a cheap padlock versus picking it? I'm assuming that, you know, the methodologies that you teach are, you know, lock picking, not getting a pair of bolt cutters or pliers or something and just hacking the lock off.
So yeah, we do believe that, like, we don't like to damage locks. Like, we, and I think that's like what a lot of the lock picking community is like, we would rather like open that lock by picking it than have it broken. So it, there's different degrees to opening the lock. So
have you ever been so frustrated with something that you have broken?
Yes.
there's been times that, and it's one of those things, like, for me, I don't know if it's worse for, like, other people, but I have to see someone else open it. Like, it, I'll spend, like, an hour trying to open this lock, and then I'll, like, pass it off to someone else, and they'll, like, within, like, minutes, they'll have it open, and I'm like, now give that back to me. And then I go after it again, and then after I see someone open it, I'm like, okay, it can be picked.
That's an important point, actually, because there's a lot of, you know, even with, I know people running like 100-meter races, they didn't think that, you know, a certain mark could be achieved, and someone achieved it, and they just keep getting better and better because they can see it can be done. So that is, yeah, it's an important point. If you know something can be done, you just keep going, whereas you tend to give up otherwise.
And so that's really pressuring the lock manufacturers to continue to improve their products as well. I'm sensing, the more I talk with you guys, I'm sensing a real appreciation for the art and mechanics of locks themselves, and appreciation for the ethics behind lock picking.
Yeah, and it goes into, like, especially like when you go into price of a lock, like, you, it's kind of like wine, where, like, you can buy like a $10 bottle of wine and it can be really good, and you can buy a $300 bottle of wine and it can be terrible. So it, pricing is like that too. So my friend, he lives in Oregon, he bought this like $300 like Samsung like touch screen, like you touch the screen and it randomizes the numbers, so your password could be 1234 and then it would leave the smudge marks on the screen, but this makes you touch, like, you touch the screen and it makes you punch in like 4 different numbers, and then it'll light up on the screen what numbers you should push, and then you punch in your password.
Oh.
So he calls me over there and he's like, hey, I bet you can't open this. He's like, I spent like $300 on this lock. Like, this lock is, you can't get in here at all. And he's like, look at this, you gotta like touch the pad, it makes you touch these numbers, you can't get my pin code off of this. And then right below it is, in case, you know, the battery dies in it, you have that secondary where you insert the key to open it, was a very, very cheap Schlage, which is a brand of padlock.
Right.
Or a brand of lock, and I just picked it right open. Like, and I was like, look, this is, and he's like, oh, well, this isn't secure at all then. And I was like, well, I can fix that for you. We can, like, actually replace the inside of that with actually something more
secure. So keep the technology, but improve the mechanical lock inside of that.
But is what it is, like, they're not educating. I mean, you're thinking, yeah, I'm paying $300 for this, this is gonna keep me secure, whereas that secondary option of, like, in case the battery fails, you still have that lock that isn't very secure. And people aren't educated in that. And that's what we try to help educate people in, is, you know, the types of locks and, you know, pricing on it.
And that's what really ultimately changes the manufacturers and forces them into making security updates and improving the product is the consumer stops buying them, you know, and they go, hey, this is actually not okay that this is a terrible, terrible piece of hardware that's not actually protecting us, so.
I really like that anecdote about breaking into his friend's new fancy $300 combination technology mechanical lock, because I'm noticing in a lot of the Airbnbs that I visit now, if the host is unavailable when we check in, the host will say, oh, but you know, the code for the lock on the door is these four numbers. And you can punch in the code or flip up a very flimsy little metal door underneath, and you know, come to think of it, it just looks like any ordinary residential door lock. So you think they're advertising on their listing pages, oh, you know, secure technology smart lock, you know, secure apartment room, and you think, well, really someone can just bypass that completely, an amateur lock picker with not the best of intentions.
And it's getting more and more with Bluetooth locks. So you start to see these things where you're like, hey, you can unlock it from your smartphone and you can do all that kind of stuff. A couple of the early instances of those, people decided to take them apart and found all sorts of things inside them.
Vulnerabilities,
yeah. So, of course, what happens is they want to be first to the market with something that's got software in it. They don't put the time and effort into securing the software either, and so then it's more vulnerable than what it would have been.
Right.
It's something you're seeing all the time now.
I was still very happy to see. I stayed in a hotel in Westchester County, New York, a couple of months ago, and was really excited about the Bluetooth access for my hotel room door, but I was incredibly relieved that on the other side of the door, I still had the option to close my deadbolt, my physical deadbolt over the door, because I'm looking at it and I'm like, no. And there was actually no option to put a physical key. Mm. It was just a completely smooth plate where you would normally see a mechanism above the door handle.
Yeah. And there's been instances of hotels, some of the larger hotel chains have had access ports for the programming interface on the outside of the lock, and so you can literally plug a cable in, and some guy generated a master key that could get into all of them. But you know, unless people are doing this, unless they're actually, you know, penetration testing, for sake of a better word, and testing these products, the manufacturers don't look at it. They don't really care.
Cue the collective sigh from Beaches and me.
And it's more of how many times is that actually going to happen? If you got one person that knows about it and knows how to make it, it's still that technology where they would have to develop the device or construct it, and then they would have to actually access the port and go through everything.
Yeah.
So the manufacturers look at that and they say, okay, you know, maybe one out of 100,000 people are going to actually do this, so we're safe for that long. And it goes with locks as well. I mean, all locks can be opened. Like, every single lock has a vulnerability and can be opened. It's just a matter of how long it takes to open it. So if it takes you, let's say, like 6 hours to open a lock, then in that 6 hours, is somebody going to walk by and see that person trying to open that lock? And if so, that lock is secure. Like, you don't have to go any further. Like, if someone passes by and sees someone else trying to get into that lock within that 6 hour period, then that lock is secure. So we also try to educate people on that as well. So you don't need to get something that takes like 100 years to open,
right,
when there's constant traffic in front of that lock.
Yeah, it's the old security adage of slowing people down and causing them to make more noise than they would necessarily have to, like putting stones down your driveway, right? So if anyone's going to walk around, makes a noise, makes a racket, they generally run off. Same scenario.
So this goes along with the whole enabling yourself with information so you can protect yourself and be more secure in your home and with your assets. And it's really interesting to me because, well, especially at a place like this, we think so much about the security of our digital assets when, you know, our physical assets are just as important. Or a lot of times you think your the things that you're locking up are protecting your technology hardware assets as well. So it really, I think, having the Lockpick Village here, meeting you, is sort of bringing the whole idea of personal security full circle. It really does bridge the gap for me between cybersecurity and physical security.
We've seen a lot of instances of things like gun safes and safe boxes and things like that, that people typically entrust their most sensitive documents, possessions, things like guns, right? Like, you've got people's lives potentially at risk, and they just have terrible locks on them. And so if you don't know that, you just, it's got a lock, it's fine. Yeah, so it is all about education.
So how much of your organization would you say is education and enablement and being a goodwill ambassador for knowledge of how to protect yourself and your assets?
I would say 100%. I mean, that's what we strive to do, is we try to educate like anyone and everyone about lock security, like how secure you actually are and what you're doing with your locks. Like, if it's a low security item, then yeah, you can use one of those padlocks that you can open in seconds. But if it's a higher security, then yeah, you want to use something. Because like a lot of the server rooms and stuff like that, I mean, you don't even have to use lockpicks. You can just bypass it with like a credit card. And that makes it even less secure, because anybody can do that. Like, it takes no skill at all to just shim the lock right open. So we try to educate like on that too, is like, yeah, you may have the best firewall, you may have the highest security, but if I can just get into your office and open it with a credit card, then that lock is not secure at all, so your system is not secure.
It's a lot of showing people as well. You can talk to people and be like, hey, I wonder if that lock's really secure, and they're like, yeah, sure, I don't really care. If you open it in a matter of seconds in front of their eyes, all of a sudden you see them go, oh. Like, it becomes real for them, right? And then they start thinking of all the things they've got locked up.
Well, the things that they have, the things that their family has.
Yeah.
Their friends.
Yeah.
So I'm sold on lockpicking. I'm excited to go check out the tables. When I go over there, what will I be able to do here at Hope with Tool?
So we run, we have a whole lot of tables out there with a bunch of locks that you can try. Pick sets, things like that. We also run what we call like demo sessions, intro sessions, which give you an intro to lock picking. We run through a whole stack of slides, give you a talk, explain everything from a mechanical point of view as to how it actually works, because you can't typically see inside of the locks. And so you really have to understand what you're dealing with before you can overcome it, right? Like a lot of things. So we run through that. We've got tool staff running around helping you, and they can talk you through things and show you. Again, it's a lot about feel, and so that's hard to explain on a slide, so we like to sit there with you and try and walk you through
it. It's also hard to explain on the radio, so that's why you should definitely get yourself over to Tool if you're here at Hope.
Definitely. So we'll be running sessions pretty much all day from 10 till midnight.
Perfect.
Come over, check us out. We have a whole range of stuff to buy. You can buy lockpick sets from us. We have clear locks, which are kind of fun to play with, where you can it's basically like a padlock that's made of clear acrylic. So you can see all of the pins and springs move inside as you put the key in. We have practice locks for sale that are progressive, so they start off at the easiest and go up to something that's more challenging, so that you have a broad range once you get used to picking. We got all sorts.
And then once you've like mastered that set, we do also have like a set of progressive advanced locks that have like security pins in them. So once you're like, hey, I've mastered the 1 through 6, then there's actually a 4-piece advanced set as well.
So you just mentioned the term security pin, is that?
Yeah, so security pin is what that is there's different types. There's like a spool pin, which is kind of shaped like an eye. Mm-hmm. And is what these security pins do is they actually, they make it harder for you to pick the lock open. So it actually gives you more of a difficulty while picking the lock.
It's basically a response to a vulnerability that they found, right? So talking about this continuing idea of making things better, they looked at how you pick a typical pin tumbler, and they made modifications to the pins to try and make that more difficult. To add a few extra steps in there that basically trick you. And so it gets a lot more tricky. But again, there's still ways that those pins behave that are different from every other pin. And so you learn to identify those and then again learn how to get around those.
So they're more difficult but still pickable.
Yeah.
They're still mechanically pickable.
Yeah.
Yep. So how are we doing on time, Beaches? Are we okay? We have a few more minutes?
We have all the time.
All the time in the world. Ooh. Well, So I'm thinking here, I was thinking about locks and I'm poking around your website a bit, and I noticed that there's a page on the site, I'm looking at the tool.us site, remember that's tool with three L's. Three O's, sorry.
Not enough sleep, huh?
You know, I had 4 hours, that's plenty.
Yeah,
that's plenty for a conference.
Sounds like a lot for Harvard.
Yeah, but what I noticed is that there's a page dedicated to what I think is a really charming tradition, the idea of love locks. And I'm looking, and you have a lot of information here, and it made me think fondly of an experience that, how do I say this, I had a very nice experience with locks on a trip to Germany last summer. I was in Köln, and I was walking around, and I saw a bridge with a footpath on the side to cross the River Rhine. It was the Hohenzollern Bridge. And I didn't know before I walked across the bridge that it was a love lock bridge. And so I start walking, and I'm noticing, oh, you know, there's a lot of colors on the side of this bridge here. It must be some sort of art thing, completely covered in, like, confetti of multicolor and metallics on the side of this bridge. But upon closer inspection, and as I'm walking down this bridge, I see, wow, these are thousands and thousands and thousands of locks. And what really stuck with me is that these locks, while some of them were just, like you said, the cheapo master padlocks, people put a lot of time into customizing these locks with special colors, engraving, high-end paint jobs, it looked like, on these locks. And so it made me think that locks, you know, in terms of cultural significance and emojis that we send day to day, I'm sure as you guys use the padlock emoji a lot, that locks are...
Yes. Radio can't hear us make noises or make gestures to each other.
That's right. So. There's more significance to locks than we think about. And I just wanted to call out that I appreciate that you noted the love locks on here because it made me think of a fond memory that I had. And, you know, draws me to want to ask, so you mentioned practice locks and having your, I'm assuming you start off with a very basic beginner's kit of your lock picks and you build it as you go and you have practice locks. Is there a sense of pride or personalization to your specific arsenal of lock pick tools? Do you have practice locks that are adorned with initials or names of loved ones, things like what's the personal investment and personalization of your lock picking arsenal?
So there's, yeah, most people start off with a basic set, and as they get more into it, they decide that they either want to modify them. There's sort of a lot of people that
modify the tools.
Modify the tool to get what they want. Some of them go about that because of a specific need, or some of them it's more a cost-saving technique. They're normally doing things with their hands, so they enjoy the craft of making something. And so there's a lot of that. There's a lot of on the forums. There's a couple of lockpicking forums around. And there's a lot of homebrew things where people have made their own handles and they're gorgeous. Like, there's a lot of really talented people out there that make, solid wood handles and resin handles, all sorts of stuff. Some of them will make those handles out of things that have been precious to them, right? Like, they'll take a piece of wood from a family table that they had and turn that into a pick. And there's a lot of modification, especially to create once you get more advanced. You need to make the tool that does the job, right? So it's not about having one screwdriver, it's about having 10, and maybe you only use one once for one particular lock, but...
And like you mentioned about customizing the handles, I would think improving that tactile experience specifically for you.
Definitely. And you learn a lot more about it, right? Instead of just going and buying something and using it, if you have to learn about how to make it and why it's made like it is, you get a whole other understanding of it. Down to, you know, why is it angled this way? Why is it this thick? What happens if I make it thinner? Yeah.
I really like this sort of bridge. Hope I'm not the only one seeing it, but the folks who aren't the lock pickers, who just want to get a lock and put it somewhere either for, a significance like a love lock or a preteen girl's lock on her diary. You know, the love and care that goes into making that lock your own. But on the other side of things, you have the lock pickers who put a lot of TLC and time customizing their lock picks and their tools.
And
I really like that.
I guess that always also segues into the collections of locks, right? So, and like any hobby, people get notorious for collecting things. And so what you'll see is people will take a particular bent towards something. So some of them might only collect padlocks. Some of them might only collect locks that came from railways or public infrastructure, things like that. And so even just talking with people, they'll bring along their padlock collections or their lock collections, and they're like, hey, I really enjoy padlocks that, you know, or locks that have two keys in them. So they're like dual control. So things from like safety deposit boxes and things like that. So that can be just a really interesting thing. It's like people, you know, collecting cars. Some of them will focus on vintage cars or Fords or 1930s or whatever it is. And again, with any hobby, it just goes from there, right?
Well, so I wonder now, I was thinking also of, I'm not sure what the technical name is, but a dial lock, a combination lock.
Yeah, sure.
So the lock pickers that are in Tool, so I understand the most common is the pin and tumbler. Do you have folks in your chapters who also work on combination locks?
Yeah, like combination and like safe locks. They're actually, it's a more complicated and time-consuming endeavor because it requires more just dialing in the numbers. So it's easier to, in my experience, it's been easier to pick a lock than it is to figure out the combination because you got to go through the numbers. Mm. Like as you're picking a combination lock, you would pull up on the clasp, and as you're turning, you're going to hit like two numbers, and those aren't the right numbers. It's like the number in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some members that are very, very good at that. And
it's very time consuming.
How
and
true?
Especially if you get to like picking safe, like cracking safes. It's kind of, I mean, the two are related, but generally because of the time taken to learn it, not a lot of people get into it. They become interested, but they don't want to put in the hour or 2 hours that it would take to open it, even once you know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it just really depends how much you get into it.
Is there any truth behind the, you know, traditional Hollywood image that you think of with someone sitting there with a stethoscope on the front door of the safe, listening as they closely turn? So are there audio cues and there also audible cues as well as tactile and keeping track of numbers on the side of the notepad? It sounds a lot more complex than.
It's more about feel, but the stethoscope, they do have listening devices that can actually help you listen, but a lot of it is about feel. Yeah, which again takes a long time to build up, and it's about feel with picking locks as well. So it's a natural progression for some folk.
So in getting back into like the love locks, it is in some aspects a form of graffiti as well, because I know here in New York City on the Brooklyn Bridge, they allow them, but the city comes through, like, I want to say, like, once a month, and they'll cut them off.
That's heartbreaking. Heartbreaking.
So it's not that, it's because they can't account for the weight of the locks and the traffic that is going on over the bridge.
As we saw in France, where a section of the bridge fell off or became dislodged, and they had to cut them all off, so.
So the actual community has like started making these love lock trees and like actual areas where you would, like you're able, like it's reinforced to where you can attach many padlocks. And those like types of art form are like acceptable to attach like padlocks to. It's just, if you want something to last forever, like, I mean, you want to make sure that the location of where you're putting the love locks is actually going to last forever, instead of like on the Brooklyn Bridge where you come out there and it's all removed by the city.
It's also interesting that people, they put a lot of significance in it, but then they can often just go and put it with everyone else's. Whereas I feel like it would be more more personal if you were to put a love lock at, say, the spot where you first met.
Right.
Which might have been the bridge, but it probably wasn't. Yeah. So that's another idea, I guess, for any.
I'm thinking
just
also
like meeting
in
people at bridges.
Just like,
like just walking by and it's like, hey, how are you doing?
I'm thinking, so for any, you know, middle school, high school relationships, that we must signify that our love will last forever. When, come on, your teenage relationship, maybe it's better for you to go put your love lock on the Brooklyn Bridge. But for folks who are celebrating anniversaries,
just buy a cheap one.
Yeah.
Just get
a little
locks.
Luggage lock. Your love is represented by the size of your lock.
For the TSA locks, you don't even have to really pick them. There was a big to-do. There's actually, I think, there's a talk on it.
Yeah, there's a talk. One of our members, Tool, on Night Out, and Darkson, they'll be doing it this evening, or is it?
I don't remember seeing
Johnny,
a lock.
Johnny
I believe
Christmas
it's tomorrow.
Or is this
yeah, Johnny Xmas will be in there, too. It's in the evening. It's like closer to mid... Yeah, right here. It's on Saturday.
Yep.
Saturday
at
11.
Yeah.
Because Johnny was complaining that like all he got all these talks and they're all at like 11.
Yeah. Which now, maybe you guys can answer this. This is the first year that they're running till like midnight with these talks. Is that correct? Or have I just been asleep?
I personally couldn't verify that without actually going back and looking at the schedule.
Yeah.
It's all of the past hopes have been a blur to me, just
exactly.
No time stamps in this blur.
No. my first hope was Hope 9 and I saw one talk.
Yeah.
On the last day. Because I think they were like, go upstairs and sit in some room, just do it.
So I'm doing okay already, having seen 3 at my first time.
Yes,
book.
You're doing
I'm
phenomenal.
Good.
No, that's above and beyond. Like, normally I think we'll see 1.
Yeah.
Like, on average. Especially, like, even at DEF CON and things like that. Like, we're in the village so much that, like, most of our members maybe see 1 or 2 talks.
But, I mean, that's kind of the thing, though, is that a lot of times, like, if you wanted just to see the talks, like, they're live streamed.
Yes.
And then they're, like, up on YouTube.
Yes.
Or you can buy them on DVD, or thumb drives, or pirate it. I don't know. There's lots of ways to do these things. But, like, usually you come and it's about meeting the new people and learning new things.
Learning how to pick locks.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's more of like a congregation. I agree with that. Like, especially in the lock community, like some of these guys, we won't see them, but like once or twice a year.
Yeah.
When they show up to these conferences. So, it's kind of nice because it's like getting the gang back together.
Yeah.
And it's that community. And, I mean, yeah, we'll talk online and stuff, but it's not the same as like getting together, having a beer.
Right there with you.
Yeah, we're also going to be at DEF CON coming up the weekend of it. So, if you're there, stop by and have a look.
Is that 2 weeks?
Yes. Yeah, it's like 2 weeks from now. So
yeah, 2 weeks.
Madness.
That's crazy. I don't know how anybody can really pull that off. Like, I think about coming to Hope and I'm like, oh god, this is good. I love it, but I hate it so much. We have to drive. We drive all of this, like this stuff up, all kinds of stuff. And we are friends with some of the guys that do the network stuff. So like, car full of switches. We had to reorganize some stuff because we definitely had a couple of servers that were like on top of stuff in the back of the car, and Nick got slammed on the brakes a little bit and almost took my head off. So.
Oh wow!
Oh my goodness!
Like, that was not good. Let's not
server
to the brain.
Well, I'm not sure how great this will translate to radio, but I was really hoping to see and maybe talk about some of the tools that you use. Do you have any tools with you right now?
Of course.
You know, I said earlier, I was like, well, they're lock pickers. They've got to have this stuff with them all the time, right? So we're looking at a small canvas kit here, and it almost looks akin to, no offense, but like a manicure, a travel manicure, pedicure kit, way it opens up.
A lot of people is what they'll do is you'll see these sets of lock picks, and they'll have, you know, like 140 lock picks, and you don't, like, a lot of times you'll get that 140 set and you'll only use like 1 or 2 picks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so there'll be like 1 or 2 picks that you'll actually use while the rest of them you don't use at all, or they only have 1 use. Like, you know that this pick right here, if I take it, I can use that to open this one lock and that's it. It won't be able to open any other lock. So a lot of it is you'll have more turning tools then you will picks. So normally, like, I have one, like, hook.
Just to quickly explain, that you require two tools to actually pick the lock. And what you're doing is you're mimicking the action of a key. So
right.
The key has two functions. One is that the jagged cuts in the top of it actually raise the pins to the correct height. And once they're at the right height, you apply the sideways force, the cylindrical force, to then turn that cylinder. And so what you do here is you mimic those same physical forces with two tools. And one is typically the turning tool, which, relatively self-explanatory, that provides tension to the lock to turn it. And that's what enables us to use the pick to then lift the keys, lift the pins as
so,
the key would.
So for any pin and tumbler lock, you're using two tools at the same time?
Correct.
You would always need two tools.
Okay.
So, I mean, most of the time, like, I have a lot of rakes. Now, a lot of the community doesn't believe that the rakes are good, but if it's a lower security lock, the raking will actually open the lock faster than single pin picking, which the community will once again tell me that
so
I'm
this
wrong.
Is personal
it
preference?
It just relies on randomness, right? So a lot of people, I mean, it's kind of like photography. Some people like to use filters to achieve an artistic effect to get to an end, and other people like to stay purists. Raking is a form of essentially just raking a tool in and out until you randomize it enough that you get it. It's pretty much the same as brute forcing something.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was
right?
thinking.
If you're using a single pick, like a diamond or a hook or something similar, you have to manipulate each pin, which means you have to know what you're doing. So a lot of people will start with the rakes, get a lock open and be like, hey, this is cool, I can do this. But that will only go so far and only deal with the lower security locks.
And then, like, more in the higher security locks, all you're doing is getting, like, you'll start it off with raking, but while you're still applying that turning pressure, you would switch tools to, like, a hook or a half diamond, and from there, you would single pin pick. So, like, you may be able to set, like, three of the five, and then the last two you would set by single pin picking.
So these tools that you're referring to, the hook, the half diamond, are these actually the shapes at the ends of these tools?
Yeah, so the hook, it looks just like a... Like a finger.
It looks like a hook.
Yeah, it looks just like a finger at the end. And then with that, the end of it, all you're doing is just like if it's
lifting.
On the end of your finger,
yeah.
You're just lifting it up and down. And then the
there's all sorts of crazy names as well.
Half diamond. All it is a half diamond at the end.
Oh, it's a very small half diamond shape at the end of a metal pick.
And then this one right here you can use for single pin picking as well as raking or zipping.
Zipping.
What are these tools made of? Steel?
Yes, these are made of steel.
Is that generally the preferred material of lockpicking tools?
They vary. And there's a lot of different types of steel, right? So
right.
The cheaper picks, obviously made of cheaper steel, they will bend over time. I mean, you can pay anything up to, I think, $16 at the moment for, you know, a single pick, but it will last a long time. And they're made of stronger steel.
And so the risk of using a cheaper lockpick kit or cheaper tools would be the risk of it breaking in the lock and rendering the lock useless.
Yeah, potentially. And it just doesn't get the job done properly,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, if you're going to do it, use the right tool for the job.
Right.
But a lot of it is you'll become better with what tools you use. So if you have, like, a set of, like, 12 lock picks and you use those lock picks all the time for, like, a year, you'll be very good at using those lock picks. But then once you move into like another set of lock picks, someone else will be like, oh, I got this set of Peterson lock picks. It's amazing, I love it. And then you get a set of your own and you try to do it and you're not as successful as with the picks that you first started.
I don't know that it would make for great radio, but so I see that you have your tools with you, your lock picking tools. Do you have any padlocks with you?
We actually don't.
That's okay. I thought that might be.
I'm fresh out.
How entertaining would it be for our listeners to listen to us pick a lock?
I don't know if you'd hear
that's
much.
That's a joke. Exactly.
I mean, you might.
You would hear the click of the lock.
I see what you did there.
So is this a guarantee? I said earlier that I will make it a goal to pick a lock today, not this weekend, today. Do you feel that the organization with the education you can provide, and is it almost a guarantee anyone putting in the effort can figure out how to do this?
That's a yes and no. Like a lot of what we've had at our meetings, like a lot of people say that we were educating burglars how to break into houses, whereas the easiest way to get into a house, like you'll go up to the front door, the easiest way is to bust a window.
Right.
And that's what a lot of burglars do. They want that quick and easy. So is what we have is at our meetings, like I've had a few in New York City, I don't know if you've had any in Boston, is someone will show up and they'll be like, I have this picture of this lock and I want to know how to open this lock the fastest. And is what we do is we sit them down and we say, okay, well, you start with this progressive lock number one, you move to number two, you move to number three, and you'll see the frustration in them as they'll start to do it. Like, they'll get number one open, they'll get number two. As they get into the number three in the progressive, it'll be a little more frustrating towards them. And it's what they're trying to do is they're trying to get it done as fast as possible
right.
to get onto that picture of that lock that they have in the basement of this house that, you know, it's theirs. Like, they assure us that this is their lock, but they want to know what is the fastest way. And they expect you to tell them, like, okay, well, this is what you're going to do. Whereas all it is we tell them, like, the fastest way to open that is if you have the key.
Oh, there you go. Of course.
And they will become so frustrated.
I'm sure that helps their frustration, yeah.
Because all they want to know is, like, they don't care about lock picking. They just want to know how to open that lock. And we say that it's easy, and it's not as easy as we say it is, but it's a lot of practice. Like, if you put in the practice, it becomes easier over time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it definitely is something that you need to put time and effort into. Which again is why you don't find a lot of burglars sitting around
right.
gently picking locks when they can get in
2.5 seconds
with a hammer, right?
Exactly.
And it's guaranteed. So it's more about the challenge and the puzzle in your brain.
And I just want to reiterate here again something I appreciate from the mission statement on the website, that, you know, it's really enabling and making people capable of understanding what their personal security weaknesses are. And I think that's invaluable for anyone, whether you're interested in lock picking or not. You should be interested in the security of your assets.
Especially today, with all the concerns around, you know, cryptography, encryption, things like that.
And I think that best example is your friend in Orange, Oregon, with,
yeah.
hey, check out my fancy new door lock.
Yeah.
Boom, 1, 2, 3. Like.
And it's yeah, and it, but it's also just like helping to educate, like. Especially like all of our meetings, like we're super like encouraging for like questions. Like, we want you to come in, like no question is like a dumb question. Like, a lot of people come to these like conferences and they're afraid to ask questions, like, oh, this may be the dumb question and they're gonna laugh at me. We don't, I mean, a lot of it is just education and it's step by step. So we won't just tell you, oh, well, that lock is easy to open. We'll tell you why it's easy to open and what lock you would use instead of that one, or how to better secure yourself.
Well, that's why I'd absolutely encourage anyone who's been listening long or has any type of interest in lockpicking, don't be as shy around the Lockpick Village like I was. Look for these guys. They're in black t-shirts, tulle with 3 O's in red letters. I've seen a lot of these shirts on, actually. How many tulle members are attending Hope, do you know?
I think we maybe have 10.
Because I've seen a lot of these shirts around. So you guys are easy to spot.
We just move quick.
And the banner is very large.
Yes.
There's a few of them, too.
And, you know, I did notice, I loved the attention to detail, the padlocks hanging from the bottom of the banner.
Yes.
I thought that was a really nice touch. Gold star for whoever had that idea.
We'll pretend that's artistic, but it was probably like, what can we latch on right now?
I mean, practicality and aesthetics don't have to be mutually exclusive.
There you go.
Exactly.
There you go. Well,
so I think we're supposed to have the knock guys in about 10 minutes, and it sounds like Side Pocket's trying to wrangle another interesting topic for that. So it sounds like we probably have at least 10 minutes left. Nothing in Hope or on Radio Salad really necessarily goes at exactly the appropriate time. let's see. Do we have anybody listening that's in IRC that has any questions that they'd like to? Now would probably be the time to just put them out there. If you guys want to join the IRC channel, because you don't know how to talk to us, it's irc.2600.net, and the channel is #radio-statler. So please join us if you have any questions. So earlier on, you guys were talking about, while we wait to see if we get any questions, you guys were talking about how some people tend to collect specific kinds of locks. So for your own personal collections, like, do you guys have a specific type that you like to collect, or have any preferences on that?
So a lot of it is the more secure the lock. So you'll go through, and I mean, some of the most beautiful locks is a Miwa that I've seen. And
how do you spell that?
M-I-W-A.
Miwa, okay.
And is what it is it's a magnetic lock, and it has the smoothest, like, key action in turning, because there is actually no moving pins that I know of inside of it. And is what it's doing is it's magnetic polarities, and it's what it's doing, it's either pushing or pulling. And as you insert that in and turn it, it just, it's a smooth rotation as it goes through. So,
oh.
Yeah.
And where would someone encounter this type of lock? In everyday, is like this specific magnetic lock, like?
So you can use it for residential. Mm-hmm. Like, I have one installed on my apartment door, and I've seen them in commercial uses, but they're pretty common. The only downside to it is if you use the key in your, like, everyday use, you want to be a little careful, because the magnets will fall out of it, like, going in. I mean, it does take a lot of wear and tear on it, but over time they have, like, worn out.
So if you like to chew on your keys, it's probably not the best lock for you.
I like to chew on my keys.
Nah. And a lot of interesting locks like that are traded as well between people, so they're not necessarily things you would come across if you went down to your local Home Depot or anything like that. And so the forums are really active places like that, especially, like, you know, people that like collecting railroad locks or whatever it might be. I like padlocks just because of how they feel, and they're easy to hold in your hand, and they're just relatively small and nice and compact little units. Yeah.
Something interesting you just said. So you mentioned that you had this type of lock on your apartment door. Is that, I'm thinking here as a renter, well, what if I, in my apartment, figured out how to pick my apartment door, and then I felt that that was a vulnerability for my apartment. Do you find that generally in the types of case where you're not an owner, is that something you were able to talk to your landlord or your leasing agent about and say, hey, this lock isn't so great on my door, can I change it? Was that a problem?
I have never had any problems with that. I've changed out a lot of locks. A lot of the landlords, all they require is that you give them a copy of the key.
Right, reasonable.
So, I mean, I've had some landlords that are just like, yeah, if you switch it out, that's fine, whatever. But then there's some that, like, if they do, like, maintenance and stuff like that, they would need that, like, say you're not going to be in your apartment and you allow them access to it, all they would need is an extra key.
Okay,
so
reasonable.
I've really had no pushback from landlords about changing locks.
Yeah, occasionally you'll get big complexes that will have, like, master key systems,
right,
in which that situation becomes more complicated. But I think generally if you're paying for it yourself, I don't think there's a lot of hassle. I think if you went to the landlord and said, hey, look, can you buy me a more secure lock? Unless you proved that it was just horrific and, like, could be opened with a screwdriver, I don't think they would care, because your average person hasn't built up the skill set to pick a lock on your door.
So we've talked a lot about lock picking. What's the level of complexity for swapping out, say, an average residential lock on your front door?
Most of them just require a couple screws and maybe enlarging the actual diameter of the holes that are drilled. So when you are buying, like, a lock, you want to make sure that it is a residential, like, swap over, because, like, the commercial ones are a little bigger holes, so you would have to drill that. But there are residential, like, higher security locks that you can buy that just, I mean, you're unbolting a couple screws and then you reinsert the deadbolt.
So almost like swapping on a doorknob, where it's just aligning.
Just make sure to put a book or something in the doorway, because it's relatively common to get halfway through the install and not have the whole mechanism in. and the door will swing closed and you won't be able to unlock it. And you don't want that.
Right. Very important note. Do not lock yourself out while you're swapping out your lock. So that sounds like a pretty straightforward, easy thing for someone to do, even if they did not successfully lockpick their front door, but they were still concerned about, you know, vulnerabilities in their lock. The average person could approach that DIY.
Definitely. And even just looking at things that surround that, like you can get sort of like a steel guard that can stop the likes of the simple credit card attack where you just put a credit card, slide it down, open the door.
You can even use a screw.
Right.
Yeah. If you screw into the side, it actually defeats the attack.
And then you don't see the metal plating on the side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of little tips and tricks.
Life hacks brought to you by Tool.
And a lot of people have two locks on their door. They'll have the what they call a key and knob. So it's typically where the key goes into the knob of the door handle.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll also have a deadbolt. But a lot of people will just, you know, flick the little switch on the back of the knob and close the door, right? And so that's obviously not as secure. So if you've got it, you might as well use it. You know?
Right. Well, I know even my deadbolt on my apartment door, the other side still has, you can unlock the deadbolt with a key. Mm. It's not a one-way deadbolt. And, maybe I shouldn't say this, but it's actually I have one key. My one key is the same for my lock in my doorknob and my deadbolt.
That's pretty common.
That is common, because I think, well, you know, at least if I'm in my apartment, if someone had one key, they could open one lock. But it would make me feel safer if they were separate, so at least you need to have both keys to get in.
So even if you had, like, say, four padlocks, and they all have the same key to them, each one is going to pick differently. So the difficulty in each one, like, one may be more difficult than the other, there's still going to be a difficulty because of how the locks are machined. They go down into assembly line.
Randomized?
Yeah, well, not randomized.
Just manufacturing tolerances. They can't get them all exactly the same.
Okay.
And so one's going to be slightly off.
So that limitation for manufacturing is actually a benefit.
Yes.
To provide some variance in the locks.
But it also is the vulnerability that enables the exploit of picking the lock.
Mm-hmm.
Because without that, if those pins were all in chambers that were exactly the same size and the pins were exactly the same size and everything was lined up, you wouldn't be able to pick a lock like we know it today.
Right.
Single pin picking.
Single pin picking.
But you could do multiple pin picking.
What's the longest amount of time that you've ever spent, or maybe are spending on right now, on trying to pick a particular lock?
1 year.
I just
cracked one that I had for a year. It was a Medico, which has, I think, been regarded as America's most secure lock for the last 30 years or so, up until recently.
Up until you picked it.
Up until, yeah. No, I'm definitely just a noob at that. But, yeah, I mean, they're used for a very long time. They were the standard to use on governments, cockpits and planes, like, you name it. If you needed high security,
the
used
White
a Medico.
House.
Yeah. And they're kind of a unique lock, kind of cool. The pins not only have to be lifted to the correct height, they have to be rotated sideways as well, like around. So again, that's another example of using this idea of continuing the security and closing the security holes. They just put more things in place to make it harder to pick.
And so you spent a year working on this lock. Was that just when you had free time? You'd sit down and tinker with it?
Pretty much. Like anything, you go through stages of doing it. You get frustrated. You give up for a couple of weeks. You go back. Yeah.
Is it? And so when you're picking something over time, is it possible to say you got the first pin? You can't. It's not something you can do and say, okay, I'm halfway through picking this lock, I'll pick it up again next week.
No.
You have to start.
But you can start to learn the characteristics of the lock. Some locks, pin number 3 will always be the first one you need to attack. And it kind of goes like that. The danger, of course, is that you do it for so long that you think that pin number 3 is always the one that needs to be attacked first, when it's not. Something's happened. Like, you've just got used to doing that, and you're like, why can't I pick it? And then you discover, actually, that you've misread that particular thing, and actually pin one is the one that needs to go first. So you can get stuck in a groove, which is why it's always a good idea to just, I mean, like with anything, right? Like if you can't code something and you're losing your mind, just put it down, you know, sleep on it, come back to it, and often you'll find you'll pick it up and get it straight away.
Well, I know we're coming up in an hour now, but Click, what was your longest time you've spent working on
locks? Maybe a couple hours at a time. I don't let locks just sit. Not for a year. But, I mean, a lot of what we do is I'll have, like, a bag of locks, and I'll just, like, flip on the TV. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of lock picking, it's not looking at the lock, which a lot of people do, is they'll be more focused on seeing, like, inside the lock, which you can't. So all it is feel and kind of like hearing the clicks in the lock, so then you're knowing if you're setting the pins or not, and you just like turn on the TV and you can watch like a movie or something, but it helps relax you.
I was just going to say, this sounds very zen.
Yeah.
Very focusing.
And the more relaxed you are, the more locks you will open. Like a lot of people will get frustrated, and as they get frustrated, they apply too much turning pressure, which will not allow you to open anything. So the more relaxed is better.
Noted.
So we did actually have somebody in the IRC channel ask, have you guys ever tried to pick handcuffs?
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yes. We actually do a lot of handcuff picking and a lot of handcuff training on opening handcuffs.
That's actually it's another tech. Some people like to collect handcuffs. One of the guys in the Boston chapter collects a lot of handcuffs, and he's got them from all around the world and all different types, and he can tell you the different benefits and of various different ones.
Is there a philosophy behind, so we know the philosophy behind, you know, lock picking with padlocks and door locks is for your personal security and awareness. Is there a philosophy behind picking handcuffs?
It's a similar thing. It's nowhere near as complicated.
It's more like bypassing.
Yeah.
It's more of a bypassing attack where you are bypassing just one mechanism because there's not a whole bunch of pins inside of there, so you just one catch that you're just trying to like bypass that, and once you do that, then it allows the lock to open. Which handcuffs, they're not meant to keep like anybody in or anybody out. It's more of a restraint. Like it's not a long period of time that you'll be handcuffed, and they have a double locking mechanism which would bypass you even bypassing the lock, so you
right.
have to defeat that attack first.
Yeah, and that was another it's basically like teeth with a catch.
Right.
And
right.
So what you could do is slide something between the two and separate them and pull it open. So in response to that vulnerability, they added a lock, which essentially clamped that down and stopped it. You know, prevented, you know, all
great
sorts
question.
Of stuff.
Great
That's
question.
Actually a really good question. We are out of time. I know, it was just, we had such fun. We really appreciate you guys coming on.
Not a problem.
If you guys are listening at home, look at your local tool chapter.
Yes.
Remember, three O's.
Three O's. So you should definitely look at that. If you are actually at Hope, the Lockpicking Village is the place to be. Well, one of the places to be. We have so many.
Yes, come
but
by and say hello.
You definitely should come by and say hello. Thank you guys so much for coming in. Have a great day.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Be seeing you later to pick some locks.